7th Avenue Pizza, the official pizza of the Soda Pod.
The Soda Pod, the official beer and hockey podcast of 7th Avenue Pizza.
Welcome in to another episode of the MNCAA here with the Soda Pod. Yes, you are not seeing State of Hoppy. This is the Puck Scribe here taking to you live here. I'll be actually be sort of your new host here coming in. And obviously joining us here, Alex Micheletti. You're gracious to talk a little bit about Mankato Mavericks here. Alex, good to see you, bud.
Yeah, good to see you and talk to you. And it's a lot of fun getting geared up for another weekend of college hockey. So looking forward to it.
Well, one thing we definitely have to get out of the way is we had the Thanksgiving break last week. Alex, what'd you do? Did you have some good food? I mean, take me through the holiday break.
Yeah, I had a lot of good food. Went over to my dad's and my mom's. So, yeah, that was nice to get some good food in and watch some good football, too, and some hockey. And so, yeah, lots of fun.
Speaking of feasting, yeah, your team has been feasting on opponents over these last stretch of games here. 5 wins out of their last 6. And when this team has been winning, Alex, I know Dryden McKay is, you know, he's wonderful, first of all, but it's been your offense, I think, which has kind of taken a backseat to why this team has been so successful. Why is it that they're able to put the puck in the net so often?
Yeah, I mean, the system that Mike Hastings runs is incredible. And Todd Canott, assistant coach, and Paul Kirtland, yeah, they do a great job. And not only have they been scoring a lot, but they just, you know, stifle teams defensively too. I mean, on Saturday, Dryden was able to play. Friday night he was sick, but Saturday he played. They only gave up 5 shots and he had a shutout. And so, when you get both going, that's a tough squad to beat. And so if they can stay out of the box, watch out for this team, you know, because the only good chance you get at scoring is if the Mavericks are on the penalty kill. So Dryden doesn't have to do a whole lot.
And let's recap that past series again, because we saw 2 very different rosters Friday and Saturday. A 1-0 shutout loss again to Lake Superior State, then a 3-0 shutout in your favor. Really, this was a testament for Mankato. You could almost call it surviving the weekend, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, you're traveling all the way out there to Lake State and potential Mike Richter, winner out there. And so, it's on Friday and you start a kid, Keenan Rancier, who had never played before. And so, they tried to hold it together on Friday and they had 2/3 of their top line out and one of their best defensemen in Akito Hirose. And so, yeah, they did their best to try to win on Friday, and I'm sure they got a earful Friday night and Saturday morning, and they came out and were a completely different team Saturday, and it's nice to get Dryden back, so that helps a ton and just boosts the confidence. And I think they'd take a split for sure.
So when you talk about, you know, the roster changeover, a lot of speculation was out there for maybe who doesn't follow the team very closely. But Alex, so a big reason why the roster was so different between Friday and Saturday was maybe a little bit of some, December of, just cold and flu kind of just going through the roster. Is that right?
Yeah, you just never know what adversity is going to bring in college hockey these days. It just added to the list, COVID and everything, and now they had a influenza bug. A lot of teams have been dealing with it, you look at Duluth, they have a couple of guys in COVID protocol, and so you just hope you can get through this early and not have it come tournament time, like what happened to Michigan with COVID and having to, basically end their season, right when the NCAA tournament was happening. And so, they showed a lot of, pride in coming back and winning on Saturday, even with a lot of those guys still out. It was really impressive to see them get a shutout, just with guys that had never played college hockey before, you know, and then guys in elevated roles. And so, you know, it shows a lot with their leadership group too, with guys like Cade Borchard and Nathan Smith. And Nathan Smith is still one of the, you know, top scorers in the NCAA right now. And so definitely great coaching job by Mike Hastings. And then, you know, guys just stepping up, and, you know, they have a really, really good core leadership group that's, you know, helps steer the ship for sure too.
So what is a performance like this say, you know, because you can look at this a couple different ways. Now, there are those who say, hey, this is just a shining example of the depth and the coaching job that Mike Hastings and this Maverick squad has done. Other folks had say, hey, this is the CCHA conference. This isn't maybe necessarily the best competition. What would you have to say about, you know, both of those type of scenarios?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we hear that a lot with the CCHA, but I mean, they're all Division I hockey teams, you know? And so, you know, it's just like they say on the NFL Sundays, every given Friday night or Saturday night, any team can beat another team. We saw Ferris State beat this same Maverick squad a couple weeks ago. And so, you know, if you don't show up, you're going to get beat. And so, you have to, you know, you have to go out there. No excuses. Even if you have, you know, six or seven guys out, you still have to go out there and win. And, you know, they showed on Saturday, you know, the type of team they can be with all the depth they have, and only giving up five shots, which is in any hockey game is incredible. And no matter high school, college, NHL, I mean, that's just an incredible defense.
Really is. Let's look a little bit ahead here, Alex, because last, you know, home series here before, I guess you call it the midway point of the season, you're hosting Michigan Tech. Tell us a little bit about Michigan Tech and what Mankato is really up for this upcoming weekend there at home.
Yeah, Michigan Tech is it's always a battle. I'm sure they're pumped to not have to travel to Houghton because that's a tough place to play. It's just kind of a smaller rink, and so they're coming to Mankato. Should be nice for the Mavericks to be back, you know, back at home and you know, and getting to sleep in their own beds. And so yeah, it should be. I think it should be a high scoring weekend. They you know, they play a fast style up and down the rink, just like the Mavs. And so yeah, looking forward to it. I mean, you look at Michigan Tech. They've beaten some good teams. They swept Wisconsin earlier this year, and so I'm expecting a really tough weekend. It's not going to be easy, and you know, people have been giving crap to the Mavericks, saying they've beat some easier opponents. Well, you know, Michigan Tech, you know, was picked to, you know, finish pretty high in this league, and so you know, I'm expecting a battle for sure.
So, what sort of the things would Mankato have to do to come away with a series win here against Michigan Tech?
Yeah, you know, keep it rolling on the power play, you know, and make sure that top line can deliver. You know, when they're rolling and when they have that entire line together. Hopefully, Julian Napravnik is back this weekend. But you know, that top line of Cade Borchard, Nathan Smith, and Napravnik is one of the best in the country, and so. Yeah, if they can get that going and you know, and capitalize on you know, on special teams on the power play, you know, they're a deadly team to you know, to face. And you know, the way Dryden's going, it's incredible. He's got the last three starts he's had have all been shutouts. And so that's just incredible to say. And he's got 30 career shutouts now, and so you know, I'm expecting, you know, him to, you know, to have another great weekend, you know, as long as he's healthy. So.
And if Mankato were to lose at any point in the series, why would that be?
Yeah, I brought it up, you know, sometimes, they can, you know, take a lot of penalties and, you know, that can really, you know, I guess for any team, you know, that can really swing momentum, and especially, for the road team, if, you know, if they can get one, you know, then it just makes it really, 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 really tough. And then you're in a, you know, a grind to get out, to pull off the W. And so I think, you know, in front of, you know, in front of the fans there at home, you know, that's going to, you know, give the Mavs a lot of energy and, you know, hopefully they can, you know, get a sweep. That would be huge just to continue this run.
So, Alex, of course, being that we're recording middle of the week, we can't let you go without your predictions for this series. Again, as you mentioned, more maybe of a tougher matchup than maybe some fans may give it credit for. What do you think will happen down at the Verizon Center this weekend?
Yeah, I'm expecting high scores. And so I'll go 5-4 Friday night Mavs, and Saturday night, I think they finish off the sweep in a 3-2 victory. And so that's what I'm predicting. Just being at home, I think if this was on the road, I would not predict a sweep. But I think just being at home and at Michigan Tech having to travel, now things are kind of swung in the Mavs' favor for sure.
For those of you who wanting to know the Mavs offense here during their current 5 wins out of 6, they've scored more than 5 goals 4 times. The only time that they didn't score more than 5 was, again, their last outing, where it was a 3-0, again, win to get that split against Lake Superior State. Alex Maliklady, thanks again for joining us. And for those sticking around, as we have Drew Kovkin up here to give us a little bit of preview on the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Here with Drew Cove and talking with the Minnesota Golden Gophers. And Drew, I have to at least hit you right in the head. How in the hell did you let the Fighting Hawks win one game against the Gophers? Seriously, what the heck's up with that?
Well, I thought it was going to be a split going in, but you know what? It was kind of like a night and day performance. I actually made it up to Grand Forks for both games and got to see him in person. And I'd seen one game at the Ralph before. It was Gophers North Dakota a couple years ago, but this time I was in the stands and got to see it both games, both nights. But yeah, it was a night and day performance. It felt like two weekends there. It was weird. But the Gophers absolutely dominated on Friday. And then Saturday came around and North Dakota made the adjustments and the Gophers came out flat. And it kind of looked like polar opposites. It looks like the team switched jerseys going into the second night. And I don't know. It was just it was an uncharacteristic kind of performance, especially for a Saturday. The Gophers they've struggled so much on Fridays, and then they come out and just guns a-blazing on Friday night. And I don't know. It turned out to be something they were able to claw back into, but you know they were out of it too early and for a little too long to make that comeback make that comeback effective and go all the way.
So this was your first time at Ralph Engelstad Arena to America's Sweetheart team. Just kidding. What was it like to be an opposing fan at the Ralph? What was the atmosphere like? Did you get a lot of hard time? What was it like to be in the stands there up in Grand Forks?
Well, see, ever since I wasn't donning any maroon and gold, and neither were any of my my family members, especially my dad, who's a big Gophers fan. He wasn't he wasn't wearing any maroon or gold, but I could see the few fans that were there that were wearing Gopher colors. They weren't really given too much of a hard time, especially Friday night. Saturday night might have gotten a little bit more ribbing, and especially as everyone's leaving the stadium, feeling pretty good on Saturday night. But no, it's just it's a fan base that knows hockey. Obviously, it's they understand what makes the game good, and they. Kept it very friendly and very fun for just about all involved. So it's a cool atmosphere. And man, is that rink cool? That is just it's a palace. That's all I can really say. It's like you can't even call it a rink. It's a palace. It's just there's nothing that compares to it. Imagine being the standard for I can't imagine as a kid growing up and saying, oh yeah, the Ralph is the rink I go to, and then everywhere else is a step down. I can't imagine.
Well, to be fair, they filled their building in like, 3M at Mariucci's. Am I not right about that?
Yeah, no, the Ralph was definitely full. And yeah, Mariucci's been far from it for the last couple of years. So, but, it was a great atmosphere. It was cool to be in a full barn again. It was weird after so long of not being in a hockey rink. Again, I call it rink when it's not really a rink there, but it was a lot of butts on the leather cladded seats, and it was really loud in there.
And that's the college hockey atmosphere that I think those who followed, the Gophers through the WCH years, this is what you looked forward to, this matchup. I would argue, as a Husky guy, not that I have, jersey behind me that, tell the folks who are watching that's who maybe I root for. or
no way, really?
Or, no way. Not at all. But this was probably the matchup you had circled in the calendar. Is probably the marquee regular season matchup, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, for college hockey fans that appreciate, and even the PA announcer in at the Ralph was said, all right, here we go for some old time North Dakota hockey and the best rivalry in the game. And that's and obviously that's biased because it's North Dakota. I think Minnesota would say the same thing, is that's the best rivalry in college hockey. And I mean it's got to be pretty darn close from a very objective eye. But it was a great atmosphere. That's the one that all the fans schedule. That's why everyone's clamoring for it to be on TV in the Twin Cities market. That's why when it's down here, everyone, the Midco folks up in Grand Forks and Fargo, really try and get all that they can out of from a TV spot when it's owned by the Gophers at Mariucci. But it's hard to describe given just how passionate this fan base is, and both fan bases are, especially after all the time away. And it'd be hard to say. I mean, they haven't really been. I mean, it is a rivalry, but they haven't been intense rivals the last 6-7 years. They've only played a couple. I mean, last time they played was 2-3 years. I mean, in a barn that's owned by either of the two teams, they played down in Las Vegas 2 years ago. But 3 years ago, I think, was the last time they played up at the Ralph. So it's just a great rivalry. It's a cool spot to be in. And I really hope that they can keep this going and keep these series between the two teams going, and just like the Minnesota schools too. And those rivalries deserve to be pushed, and fans love it. And I think the administrations and the ADs they got to see that and realize that and act on it.
And all joking aside, I do think that that's a rivalry that just has to keep going. I think they have to have a matchup between these two clubs, whether you switch it between Mariucci and the Ralph every other year. You just can't go another year without those two teams facing in a regular season non-conference battle. I just think that was a travesty to not have that happen. But some other really positive Gopher news, and I want to touch on this, obviously the U.S. National Development Team releasing their preliminary roster for the World Junior Championship. Obviously, at the end of this month is my favorite hockey tournament to watch every single year, but a couple of Gophers making that preliminary roster. Can you take us through the names and why you think they've been listed?
Chaz Lucius, obviously a startup up front. He's had a pretty solid start to the year, kind of getting his footing under him. He's still undersized. You can tell kind of the jersey fits a little bit baggy. And this weekend, I don't think he had a particularly good weekend at all this weekend, especially Friday night, even though he did get an empty net goal in the end. You could tell the physicality of an experienced team like North Dakota was really able to work him off of some pucks. But he's got the offensive talent. He's got the hands that'll really succeed on bigger ice and in a more finesse kind of best on best tournament. I think his style of play will fit in really well. Not necessarily that it doesn't at the college level right now, but I think in a bunch of tournament with a bunch of guys his age and probably his size, his same mindset, he'll really flourish. I think he has a chance to. And moving on to Matthew Nyes, who is anything but small, man, is that kid. He is so good at playing college hockey right now. He was kind of North Dakota really had him marked this past weekend, but man, he has really shown his ability to score, his ability to handle the puck, his ability to make moves. His hands are good. He's big. He's obviously as good at skating as anybody else on the team. And obviously a lot of these college players just have the skating ability that is just really out of this world. And yeah, I think he's got the complete package. And yeah, like I think I was saying a little bit before, the Gophers are going to be lucky if this guy sticks around for 3 years. I wouldn't be shocked if he leaves after two. Who knows what can happen here, but I mean, he's got a bright future ahead of him. And I think he's going to really put a lot of people beyond just Minnesota and the Midwest and the Western college hockey world on notice if he's able to make the U.S. team. And I think right now he's trending upwards, and really I hope he does, just to be able to show off that talent. And the U.S. could always use a big body size like that. I mean, how could you not in a tournament with a lot of younger guys who are like Chaz Lucius, maybe not even not necessarily the biggest guys in the world yet. And kind of take advantage of some of that. But and then on the back end, Brock Faber, he was with the team in the past as well. He's He's shown a lot of offensive upside and some defensive ability as well. And in his year so far with the Gophers, and he was obviously a young guy on a pretty experienced staff last year. But now he's kind of coming into his own and being able to showcase that two-way game. And I think that's the type of style that the U.S. team really could use and really, really needs there. Just at this tournament to kind of have some defensemen be able to make a lot of plays and kind of be like a secret weapon, maybe in the power play or something like that, just to add another offensive secret to the arsenal there.
I would agree that Matty Nyes, I think, is a lock to make the Utah the tournament team, just because, again, he is that complete package. He's also got the size, especially when you go up against teams like Finland, Sweden, and especially Canada. I think that size is huge go into that matchup. Speaking of matchups here, Drew, this is probably, as far as regular season goes, besides North Dakota, which is a non-conference game, I think this was probably the Big Ten regular season ticket. A lot of people circled it. So the Gophers traveling to Michigan and taking on the Wolverines this weekend. And man, what's the series going to look like? This is two heavyweight battle teams, a lot of talent between these two. What can we expect from this matchup?
Yeah, we get another instance of Jack LaFontaine going back to his old barn, his first college barn. And Yost really is a barn. I've never been there. That's next on my list after the Ralph. I need to go to the Yost. I've been outside it a couple times, but never inside. And that'll be a fun place to watch a game. I wish I was going this weekend. Unfortunately not, though. But Jack LaFontaine's going to have one last go of it here at Yost. And I think he's really going to need to step it up, because obviously you see the offensive talent and the first round NHL talent that this Michigan team has. And it is going to be a match that I think sets the tone for the whole Big Ten. And obviously the Gophers, I think, have underperformed at times and given points to teams that not that they have no business being in games with, but series that should have been sweeps end up being splits for the Gophers, and they've got a couple extra losses on the schedule. But this will be really the tail of the tape here, and it'll matter. I used to whisper pairwise this time of year, because I mean it's hard to really seriously say those numbers until after some kind of holiday break, and as teams kind of come into their own and we really understand what teams are good and what teams aren't. But I think we know enough about Minnesota and Michigan to say, all right, the pairwise, it's going to impact these games a lot. And if it ends up being a split, it might be a little bit less, but if one team ends up with a sweep, it'll be pretty defining for the conference as a whole. But I think also just the way the rest of the team seasons go, and especially until they match up again back at Mariachi.
Couple of questions left for you, Drew. Why would Minnesota win this weekend? Also, how is it that they could lose?
I think it's hard to say if they fall asleep. Like Saturday at the first period, it was a little bit of a touch and go, saying, okay, there was a lot of skating around and the puck was just kind of there. There was one sequence of 45 seconds, I think, right before North Dakota got, I think, their second goal of the game on Saturday. They were skating around, a lot of guys looking like, oh, it's not my puck to touch, it's the next guy's. And then the next guy doesn't touch it, oh, it's his to touch. And then it turns into a series of unfortunate events that just keeps snowballing and turns into a giveaway in the defensive zone. And then it turns into sustained offensive pressure from North Dakota. And then bam, goal. It was a sequence that you look back at it and say, man, how many things went wrong there? Just, and how could that happen? But the Gophers,
I know
really
what happened. Is that when the Gophers morph into the Goofs? Is that what I hear?
I mean, you know what? I might not go that far, but I mean, it is a point where you just wonder, okay, man, were they all on the same page on that shift? And it was just a 45 second mental lapse, and it really hurt them. And they can't afford to make those mistakes against Michigan. Obviously, like they couldn't afford to make those mistakes against North Dakota in that Saturday game. But they're going to need to play really clean hockey, and they're going to really need to not be sloppy in their own zone. In terms of getting the win, they're going to need the guys like Matthew Nyes to have another good weekend, especially after he had North Dakota really kept them off just in this past weekend. But Bryce Brodzinski, who got a couple goals, he's going to need to play really well. And some of the guys who Michigan hasn't seen before, the Aaron Huglins of the world, they're going to need to step up and kind of showcase that, you know what, they're freshmen playing on this this pretty big name team, and they've got some bigger forwards left on this roster. But they're going to need to say, all right, I'm growing along with them, and that this is my time to shine and to make a big impact on a big stage. But yeah, if they lose, the path to losing is playing sloppy hockey, taking some penalties, not being responsible in the defensive zone, and honestly, just getting a lot of screens in front of LaFontaine. That was kind of the way the goals went in, a couple tips and some big screens, and just giving clean lanes that LaFontaine wasn't able to see. And that's just kind of the way it went on Saturday. But I wouldn't be shocked if this ends up as a split. But if the Gophers want to win two games, they're going to need to be as disciplined as any game that they've played so far this year.
So you kind of prefaced it a little bit. Your prediction is probably a split. Is that where you're going with? And how do we end up on Friday and Saturday?
I think, yeah, it ends up being a split. I wouldn't be shocked if the Gophers kind of take the way that they lost on Saturday to North Dakota and say, all right, we need to really show up this Friday and make an impact and show up against Michigan and show that, the team that they might have been able to see on tape against North Dakota Saturday isn't really the team that they're going to be facing, and it's more going to be that dominant puck possession team that was able to get to the middle of the ice against North Dakota on the Friday night. So I think it could be I wouldn't be shocked if it's a Gophers win on Friday and a Wolverines comeback win on Saturday, but you could flip flop the two, and yeah, I don't think it would be too much of a difference. And that's the great thing about series play in college hockey. It's just, you know, every night you're a little bit more motivated. If you lose one night, it can always turn the other way on the second day.
Certainly big implications for the Big Ten, both for the conference and for the Pairwise. Drew, thanks very much. And for those, again, stick around, as we're going to welcome in Ryan Stieg to check us in with a little bit of St. Thomas hockey.
Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game. But with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state or province yet, you can still get in on all the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN. Bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only, new customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And now joining us in here for the third edition of MNCAA, Ryan Stieg. Ryan, covering St. Thomas here for us. Ryan, welcome to the show, and happy to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to do this again. Didn't get a chance last week, so glad to be back on the air.
Are you hungry for more than just turkey? You're hungry, obviously, for some more college hockey action, I would imagine.
Oh, very much so. I was at a game. The last game I was at is Wednesday, so I've gotten even longer than you guys. So,
speaking of Thanksgiving, I suppose you got together with some family, you had some turkey. Take me through the Ryan Stieg Thanksgiving day.
Well, unlike some other families, my Thanksgiving experience is kind of basic. I just go over to my parents' place. My wife and I and my brother and his wife, and we just ate together and watched a little football. I think we played some games, some board games, and maybe watched a movie. I can't quite remember. I was kind of in a food coma, like, at some point. I was like, the last, I don't know, 2 hours or so, I was kind of in and out of it. So, but yeah, it was fun. I mean, a lot of people travel and do big things, but we pretty much keep it simple in my family.
Simple, sometimes less is more, Ryan. And I think with St. Thomas, that kind of echoes a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the Tommies, per se, again, in their inaugural Division I season. Let's get people caught up a little bit on their last couple of games here. Again, being swept. But what did you see from the Tommies and their opponent in that series?
Well, what they took on Penn State last week and the ultra rare Tuesday Wednesday series. You don't really see that a lot in college hockey, but that's how it was set up. I haven't ever seen Penn State play in person, so it's kind of intriguing to see how they played. All I know is that like they love to play with speed, really heavy on the offensive end, and that was the case. St. Thomas, that series did what they have done all year pretty much, and that is we'll play well for 20 minutes or we'll play well for 40 minutes, but we aren't going to be able to keep it going for 60 minutes. And it's just – that's what happened both nights, and it just – I'm still trying to figure out why that is, but it's just like it seems like they run out of gas at some point. When I talked to Rico after the Coach Rico Blasi after the games, he said, we started to play the way Penn State plays and not our game. And since Penn State plays with a lot of speed, I mean, St. Thomas has speed, but they're not a ultra fast paced team, you know, and a lot of their players, you know, are former D3 hockey players. As I've mentioned before, some of the guys haven't played for like 2 years. So you have a big like group of guys who aren't built to sprint up and down the ice repeatedly and make long passes and stuff like that and beat you to the other end. It's just not how they're built, at least not this year. Maybe they'll get to that point next year, but it's just not how they are. And they played well the first period, and it just they couldn't keep up after that. And then they started to play Penn State's game, and when you're not built for speed, that's not going to work. Also, offensively, St. Thomas has been really struggling recently on the offensive end. They were shut out 3 games in a row by Bowling Green and by Minnesota State twice. And then they managed 2 goals, one in each game against Penn State, but they didn't put enough shots on net, didn't create a lot of offensive chances. I mean, one game, I think the second game, they only had 13 shots. And you're not going to keep up with a team like Penn State just putting up 13 shots in a game. So that pretty much sums it up. It was just they just couldn't keep up. They had stretches where they looked really good and looked like maybe they could keep up with them, but it just they just weren't built for it.
You know, St. Thomas is an interesting sort of case study, right? Because you have a team that is not only coming into Division One, but they're coming into a region, and not just, I think, the CCHA conference, but in a region where, you know, it's a heavily recruited region. So, you know, they're coming into what's literally, you know, kind of 3 paces behind. But I suppose, have you seen growth from this team since, you know, I guess their opening night versus now? Have there been some bright spots for St. Thomas, even though their record would indicate not a lot has gone right for them?
No, I've seen a lot of progress. That first game, a lot of people still have that game in their mind against St. Cloud, that it was like that 12-2 horrific game that they had. But people forget it was 2-0 the following night. And I haven't, with the exception of the one game where they played in front of me in against Mankato a couple weeks ago, I haven't seen them play bad. You know, it's like they've shown that they can get better. There's guys who have stepped up their game offensively. There's their penalty kill has actually been pretty solid. If that's a bright spot, their goaltending, you know, you just look at their record and you're like, oh, 1-15. They just must be awful or something like that. But they're really not. Their goalies are solid. Jacob Berger played pretty well against Penn State considering what he was facing. And rumor has it Peter Tomey could be back this weekend. He was out last weekend. I'm not sure why, but Jacob played both games. So, I mean, it's fun to watch a team their first year in D1 try to make this journey, and it's going to be a step-by-step process. And the goal I feel and what Rico has expressed to me is we want to be able to be consistent week after week after week where we can get better. And it seems like that's the case. It's just their last two opponents are against one, a national title contender in Mankato, and then you have Penn State, which is ultra fast, and they're, you know, St. Thomas just isn't built for that this year. So it's I would definitely not judge St. Thomas in the last couple series. I think this will be an interesting one going up against Bemidji State.
And you know, let's talk a little bit about Bemidji, because you know, you talk about playing speed. Bemidji, they're a fast team, but necessarily they're not maybe that style of team. They're kind of a team that will trap the neutral zone, that kind of takes a defensive stance and will almost force teams to sort of beat themselves. So I'm curious as to your thoughts on this matchup, because if there's anything here, St. Thomas may not have to contend with speed, but they might have to contend with self-discipline.
Yeah, it Bemidji is one of my favorite teams to watch, just because they're very atypical to some of the other teams. Just like so many teams are very emphasizing offense and speed and stuff like that, whereas Bemidji's always very sound defensively. They always have good goaltending. They, like you said, trap in the neutral zone. They're just a solid program all around. You know, Bemidji doesn't recruit, you know, 40 goal scorers or any of that kind of stuff. They recruit just solid guys who can put the puck in the net. So they're fun to watch in that way. I think if St. Thomas can stay out of the box, that's been a problem for them the last few games too, is I feel like sometimes they try to keep up with faster teams, and as a result, they commit penalties that they shouldn't be taking. You saw some hooks. You saw some slashes last week. Basically, they're just kind of desperate to slow down the attack that the other team has, so they take some penalties they shouldn't be taking. And the good thing is that St. Thomas has got a good kill, but you can't, like Rico told me, I think it was Tuesday night, where he said, you can't be killing off four straight penalties in a row and expect to win a hockey game. And that's basically what happened. But I think if they can stay out of the box, if St. Thomas can stay disciplined and avoid what Bemidji likes to do, force teams to beat themselves, they could hang tough with them this weekend. This is what, for a team that struggles offensively, you're facing a team that typically does not put a lot of goals on the scoreboard, and like we've said, isn't necessarily built speed. So maybe this is a better matchup for there. I'm not saying that St. Thomas is going to sweep Bemidji by any means, but I think it'll be more of a closer series and, you know, a little more competitive, I think.
Now, we talk about offense and defense, but one thing also Bemidji State likes to do, they love to pound the bodies. They're a very physical team, especially in the 2-2-2-1-2 forecheck, excuse me. So they're going to be at it, and they like to throw their offense deep in the zone. And for St. Thomas's defense, you know, we talk about playing maybe you're not the fastest team, but you're going to have mental speed for Bemidji, because they're going to come at you and come at you hard.
Yeah, they're going to be hitting hard. And, you know, I've seen Bemidji just slam guys into the boards repeatedly when I was at Northern Michigan, and the games are always tight. Grandpa Tomey used to tell me, when you play Bemidji, it's going to be like a 3-1 game or a 3-2 game or a 2-1 game almost every time, just because that's what they're built for. So there's going to be a lot of hard hits. I think St. Thomas will be able to weather it a little bit because they have some physicality to them, but at, you know, it's just, you have to avoid playing the other team's game is what they've had a tendency to do. So you don't want to be overly physical. You want to keep up and be able to take those hits. But St. Thomas, when sometimes they try to be physical, they end up committing penalties that you can't do. And it's going to be a fun series. I, you know, each series I'm intrigued, each game I get to cover of them just to see what the opponent is. And after thinking I lose to Mankato, and they probably lose to Penn State, this could be a one where, like, you know, maybe if things go well, something could happen, you know, and that's what I'm excited for.
And what needs to go well for St. Thomas to have success this weekend against the Beavers?
Well, I think, one, your goaltending has to be good. And I think that's one of the bright spots for St. Thomas is Peter's been pretty good. Jacob's been solid the last few games he started. Jacob Berger, you know, I talked to Rico after games and he'll say, you know, Peter was our best player on the ice, or, you know, Jacob was our best player on the ice. So if your goaltending is solid, I think they're in a good spot. You stay out of the penalty box. And like I've mentioned earlier, you know, just don't play Bemidji's game. Try to stick with your own game plan. And if you fall behind, don't just think, oh, we need to keep up with the other team, or we need to change our strategies entirely. They have to just stay the course. Because when they do that, they're in it longer. They play they're able to get a 60-minute game in. They're able to play, you know, if they falter a little bit, they're able to make up for that. And it's going to be, if you combine staying out of the box, playing your own game, good goaltending, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a good weekend. I mean, they may not come out with a win, but it'll be like more of a, see, we're not like falling apart, you know, we hung tough with Bemidji kind of a thing. So it's going to be a fun series. If people are going to tune in, they're going to get some good games.
And if things go wrong for St. Thomas, why would that happen?
Well, I think they just get off their game. I think if they falter, St. Thomas is, they're not built to come from behind. You know, they want to score first and kind of just build on that and try to maintain that lead instead of, you know, you don't see a team like St. Thomas coming down. Like if they fall behind 2-0, they're kind of in trouble at that point. You know, you don't see, they're not the kind of team that can rally from 2 down or 3 down and stuff like that. They're the kind of team that needs to score first, build that lead. Or if they're down by 1, they're probably fine. Once they get down by 2, they get shaky out there, and it's just, they just can't keep up. And I think if they can do that and just avoid doing that, they'll be successful this weekend. May not necessarily be on the scoreboard, but as more of a, because you don't want to say like moral victories in hockey, because at this level there aren't. But when it's your first year as a Division I program, you know, everything is a step to getting to where you want to be. And when I wrote my preview today, as I say in my show, you know, check out the tripledeek.com because my preview came out today for the series. So in the preview, Rico loves to emphasize that this is a process and that they want to get better. And playing teams like Bemidji and Penn State and Mankato show that this is what we need to be the kind of programs that we need to face good teams. What do we need to fix? What we need to improve on? And we could be the next Penn State, you know, maybe in a few years we could get to Mankato's level, you know, we could get to Bemidji's level, you know? And so it's going to be, I'm excited, you know, if people want to tune in for it, this isn't going to be a really bad series. This is going to be a competitive one. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I would agree on the competitive series part for sure. And watching a team kind of in its infancy, right, where you kind of watch them take their first step and then you get to see them take, you know, a couple of running steps, maybe jump on the bike a little bit. I think St. Thomas is really the Minnesota team to watch if you're looking for a team to watch grow and to really kind of blossom. And I think it's going to be a really fun story to watch. With that being said, Ryan, we do have to talk about predictions for this weekend. Can St. Thomas get a win in the win column, or does Bemidji State again take both these games?
I think Bemidji will probably take both the games. I think if they can steal a point, like maybe force it into overtime, you know, or, you know, get like that, where Bemidji gets the extra point, you know, just try to get something out of this weekend. I think they might be able to get that. I think Bemidji is just a little too talented and a little too experienced, because Rako's mentioned to me before that they're just an inexperienced team right now, and that experience and that veteran leadership will probably put Bemidji over the top. But I think I could see like a 4-2 game, you know, in one of the games, and maybe like a 3-1 game or maybe a 5-3 game, something like that. If St. Thomas can get their offense going, it's actually could be a fun show. So I think Bemidji's going to sweep, but it's not going to be like the mess people might think it would be.
No. And again, as we talked about before, you know, St. Thomas, their record really, it's not the storyline. It's an easy statistic to look at, but to me, it's about the steps that this program takes every single week. As you imagine, again, it's more experienced. This program means they do definitely get it here in the great state of Minnesota. Ryan, again, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll stick around for those listening at home, because up next we have Noah Grant with a preview of the St. Cloud State Huskies. And welcome to our fourth guest here on MNCAA here on the Soda Pod, making his debut for the number 5 team in the country. It is not me. It is not me, Nick Max, and it is Noah Grant from the Huskies Warming Up Podcast to talk a little St. Cloud State Huskies. And Noah, just a little bit of something though. What the heck? Why? Why are Huskies fans pushing the freaking alarm bells? I mean, seriously. Now, granted, let's be fair. Not the greatest showing 2 weekends ago in Kalamazoo. But again, as Brett Larson talked about, you're going to have adversity, especially in the NCHC conference.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, a pleasure to be on the show and join you again from what we have been accustomed to in the Huskies Warming House podcast. It's a pleasure to be here. At first, I figured the alarm bell might be because I'm making my debut, which I think would be very applicable as well. You know,
that's partially true.
Yeah, but all kidding aside, the Huskies, it was no laughing matter for them in Western Michigan. And I think a lot of Huskies fans would say that, but there were some good signs. And I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, the previous opponent in the Broncos, they're a good hockey team. You know, they're a group that really could contend for potentially an NCHC championship this year. Definitely has a chance to get in the NCAA tournament. But some things to kind of pull away from that. You know, the Huskies still outshooting them combined on the weekend, outshooting them both nights as well. Some timely saves from Brandon Busey and the Western Michigan group. I think the Huskies, they didn't dominate for enough stretches of hockey. That's the first time all year that we can say in consecutive hockey games that they were not able to control enough of the game for long enough. And then the times when they did have opportunities, they ran into good goaltending. They ran into untimely goals given up against Western Michigan. And yeah, it was a tough weekend, but a lot of things to like. Still getting a power play goal on the weekend as well, too. The special teams is still rolling power plays at 33, just about 34%. And special teams, we'll talk about that a little bit later, I think. But it hasn't been worrisome, where it makes me chuckle that every fan who sees a bad power play or a power play that maybe doesn't generate a whole lot of momentum in a game, they think that all of a sudden the power play is the worst thing they've ever seen since sliced bread or since the North Stars left Minnesota.
You know what, Noah, though? I'm going to push the alarm bell a little bit. And here's why I'm doing that. You know, St. Cloud, a couple of statistics that I actually done some research on before today. Dead last in the NCHC in percentage of goals scored at even strength. That's a problem. And two, way too many penalties. And in fact, there was a bit of a message sent to one of the Huskies' leading scorers career-wise when a certain Husky wasn't in the lineup on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about sending a message to, I think I'm assuming you're talking about Easton Brodzinski, unless I'm mistaken. Yeah. So, you know, and there, the piece that you kind of pull from that is, you know, Easton's a guy where when you sit him, he's going to come back the next night. He's going to be ready to go. He's going to be rocking against North Dakota. And, you know, kind of going back a little bit too, you talk about hitting the panic button dead last in the NCHC. Let's talk about the NCHC a little bit before we preview North Dakota. It's been a wild card this year. There is not a dominant number one team in this league. So let's kind of throw it back a little bit. North Dakota sweeps Denver earlier in the year, right? Denver sweeps Western Michigan. Then Western Michigan comes in and sweeps St. Cloud State. Duluth split with Western Michigan in early November. So you got all these teams beating up on each other. Duluth then tied Colorado College in a 0-0 tie up at Amsoil after blowing the doors off of the Tigers the night before. And the Tigers, don't forget, got swept by the Huskies the weekend prior. And then plus the Huskies, they recorded 84 shot attempts against Omaha a couple Saturdays ago and still lost that hockey game. You know, this is going to be the ebb and flow of the NCHC. I'm not so much worried right now about the Huskies and the fact that they didn't have a great weekend. And moreover, they didn't have a good weekend in terms of they didn't respond well on Saturday, which is something we've seen from the Huskies teams in years past, where they were able to kind of get over that, you know, that trouble quickly in the next night. I'm curious to see how they respond. If you get the same effort against North Dakota this weekend, thankfully you've got a lot of soul searching time because they don't play again until December 31st. But nonetheless, that's when I start to worry. I'm really excited about this weekend and really excited to have North Dakota in the building.
Let's talk a little bit about player availability. Sam Hentges was only in essentially sweatpants and a t-shirt on Tuesday practice. He was in before the normal group. He was only shooting at the net, and granted, the session wasn't long. So I think it's a pretty fair assessment that he will not be in the lineup for North Dakota. But for St. Cloud State, as much as you can say this is a response week, you know, this actually is pretty important. They've come off now three straight losses against NCHC opponents. And as you mentioned, a lot of time to kind of think after this weekend. So you want to end the first half of the season, you know, kind of on a calendar perspective, on a high note. And no question, this is definitely a time where you want to carry some momentum into 2022.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Sam Hinges a little bit, you know, obviously a question mark at best, I would say, for this weekend, you know, and I'm not one to predict too much. But I think if you're Brett Larson, knowing you have that time, knowing kind of how Sam Hinges has kind of battled that injury bug up and down, I think it's better maybe to kind of give him a little bit more rest and kind of maybe push him towards the end of the holiday. Of course, you never know. We've seen players at all levels of hockey be a game time decision suddenly out of nowhere when we didn't expect it. But nonetheless, like you talked about, it is the bigger overall weekend. And you talk about North Dakota and what North Dakota brings, right? They're a team that has been a little bit confusing to read this year too. Granted, they've had some great success in the NCHC, 5-1 coming into this matchup. The non-conference schedule has left a little bit to be desired. They were pretty disastrous on Friday night against Minnesota last weekend. A great showing response for them on Saturday on home ice, as you would probably expect in that building, especially in that rivalry. First time since 2017 the Gophers visited Ralph Engelstad Arena. But North Dakota, you know, they have the awkward little showing against Penn State. They've been not consistent in terms of grabbing handfuls of wins at a time in the non-conference schedule. It's been, you know, one game here with a win, one game here with a loss. They aren't the same powerhouse. We talked about that in the NCHC. They are not the team to beat, so to speak. Somehow they've found that consistency early in the NCHC, mind you. But, you know, they've had that consistency issue a little bit through the season. Goaltending has been spotty, to say the least. And I think that that's going to be a point coming out as well, on as well, too. But, Nick, I'm going to kind of jump ahead a little bit here, talking about what North Dakota does bring and something that the Huskies should probably pay attention to. Number one, regardless of the fact that the game's at the Herb Brooks National Hockey Center, they bring a traveling fan base that can't be beat.
To do.
Yeah. And that's where I think Huskies fans, in terms of tickets and knowing that this is the last Huskies game, especially home game in quite a while for this group, you got to pack the Herb Brooks National Hockey Center if you're a St. Cloud fan, because you know that this fan base is going to travel very well for North Dakota. And, they've also brought contributions from freshmen all the way up through their graduate players. You know, it has been a scoring by committee. You do have a couple of players, you know, a world-class defenseman in Jake Sanderson and a lethal pair of middle-classmen, so to speak, sophomore Reese Gaber and junior Ashton Calder, that have really stepped up for this team. But besides that, it really has been a pretty even spread as far as the scoring and contributions there. So they do bring a lot of things to the table, I think, this North Dakota team does. But if the Huskies play the way that we've been accustomed to seeing from them prior to the Western Michigan series, I think it's going to be a good matchup.
So let's talk a little bit about what the Huskies have to do to be successful, not just against North Dakota, but to kind of get traction back. Mm-hmm. I mentioned before, they got to stay out of the box. I imagine that's got to be on your list too. But some things I've noticed too against Western, defensively, definitely some missed coverages, definitely some non-communicative mm-hmm. things you could see. What has to clean up for the Huskies in order to have success against the Fighting Hawks?
Well, there's no doubt that Brett Larson, Dave Shyak, Nick Oliver, and the rest of the crew for the Huskies are, I think they've been pretty good historically at cleaning some of those things up in terms of making those adjustments defensively. We saw that last year with this team, where they would have defensive lapses, where they would make the improper play trying to get out of their own zone, or just miss coverages, miss reads. And, you know, for those who have never played in a hockey game, it's easy to sit up in the press box and definitely look at missed coverages and say, well, why didn't you pick up that guy? But when the play is happening around you at high speed, it definitely looks a little bit different. So they're going to do a good job, this coaching staff will, of recognizing those adjustments and pointing out to the players, this is where you need to be. Maybe you need to be a little bit higher on the defensive side when you're as a winger covering the point. Just little adjustments. And like you mentioned, it doesn't matter what team that you're a part of. The communication piece is so important. You can be out of position and have somebody cover for you, or you can rotate in terms of defending as long as you're communicating with your team. And when we saw those lapses, just like we talked about, those lead to those inopportune goals and those opportunities against that end up in the back of the net. We saw that against Western Michigan. And it's safe to say now, going back to last weekend, Western Michigan is also a team that'll make you pay finally. It's been a while since we've talked about them being that team. North Dakota, we've known that they've been a team that can make you pay, and they still have that ability in terms of that. Nick, one of the things that I would say, if you're the Huskies and you're going to get at least a win, if not a sweep this weekend, some of the things that have got to be done here. Number one, better goaltending. And that's not a knock on David Renick. I think you need that timely save that we've been accustomed to from him over this weekend. I thought Jackson Caster was definitely fine on Saturday in jumping in for the Huskies. But I think better goaltending just goes a long way to adding to that confidence, knowing that you have that goaltender that David Renick has been throughout most of this season so far. Number one, like you mentioned, more disciplined. On top of that, some well-rounded defensive core. I think the Huskies, in terms of their defensive discipline on the D core and in terms of their point production, they've I think, got the upper hand here. The Huskies, 56 penalty minutes on the back end and six defensemen with at least 5 points. Compare that to North Dakota. They have only three players over 5 points on the back end and 100 penalty minutes. 50 of those are Tyler Clevens. This is a defensive group that you can definitely exploit. And what does that tell you if you're a Huskies fan? That means that these defensemen are either taking penalties at inopportune times, or they're getting beat on plays. And the Huskies, we've known for a long time, have been a team predominantly relying on speed and skill. And if you can get those defensemen to turn their feet, they might draw penalties. The last thing I'll mention, and it has been a theme of St. Cloud State in the past year or so, experience. 20 upperclassmen for this St. Cloud group, an entire roster full of upperclassmen. To compare, University of North Dakota, 12 upperclassmen. So that experience, knowing that they've been here before, a lot of these guys have been to the big dance all the way to the national championship game last year. You have to rely on that experience to right the ship, and especially at home in front of your fans.
So we've talked about what St. Cloud State needs to do to get the upper hand, but what are some of the warning signs, or what could go wrong for St. Cloud that would give North Dakota an upper hand here this weekend?
Absolutely. Number one is the carryover from 2 weekends ago. If you dwell on that loss or those pair of losses, or you dwell on the things that you are struggling with, I refer back to a couple of years ago when this Huskies team and this core group was still budding, so to speak. They were young. They were freshmen, sophomores moving into their junior and senior years. And they had lost the big departure of the big team that was supposed to go to the big dance and lost against AIC. You could see it in their body language that if they struggled during a hockey game, the shoulders start to slump. They start to say, here we go again. We didn't see that last year from this team. This is the first time this year that we're going to see a Huskies team and how they respond, not only physically and with their style of play, but emotionally too. How do they handle that? How do they use that experience that we had just mentioned? I want to see the team and how they can respond appropriately, how they should against a team like North Dakota. But if for some reason the mental status and the time off has not done the team well, that mental lapse can almost be more disastrous than any sort of physical play that can happen on the ice. As we kind of mentioned, a bye week, the Huskies haven't played in almost 2 weeks. North Dakota played a good opponent in Minnesota, really got tuned up as the weekend went along for them. And then the Huskies, like we talked about, then they're off until December 31st. So it's kind of a weird little timing schedule for them. So just trying to make sure that you're fresh and ready to go and those legs are ready. And then David Rennick, goaltending. If David Rennick doesn't return to form and suddenly kind of falls out of form for the second straight game that he gets an opportunity, that's worrisome for me too, because we've talked about the consistency piece with Rennick. He finally has found it, I feel like, through the first half of this year. A little bit of a lapse against Western Michigan. I don't think it was all on him, but definitely you're looking for an extra save. If that starts to rattle his confidence mentally as well too, that is a warning sign for me for a Huskies team that does rely on their goaltender from time to time.
So let's talk about the big predictions for this weekend. Again, Huskies at home in the Herbrook National Hockey Center. That does help a little bit. But what can we expect? Is this a Husky sweep? Is this a split? Or does the Fighting Hawks come in and steal both games away from the number five Huskies?
I certainly think it's going to be a split. And if it's not a split, I'm going to say at least one of the games is going to go to overtime at some point here. And I generally say that with my predictions. But these teams, I think, are still so close. And you've got a Huskies team that, you know, I don't want to say their backs are against the wall, because it definitely isn't, but they're looking to make a statement and respond and show that they are a team that deserves to contend for that top spot in the NCHC. And they know North Dakota is going to be 5-1 with a good traveling fan base. They're going to be at home at the Herbrooks National Hockey Center. They're going to respond, and I think they're going to respond right away on Friday night. I just think that Bradbury's adjustment will be pretty good in terms of Saturday's matchup, where that North Dakota might be able to find a way to steal one on Saturday before they head back to Grand Forks. And you kind of talk a little bit, Nick, about predictions here. I'm curious to see what you think as well, too. But for me, I think the difference maker is going to come down to special teams. Like we mentioned, North Dakota, 24% on the power play, 83% on the penalty kill this year, and actually only 81% in conference play. St. Cloud, with a pretty good number, obviously, with that St. Thomas game, but 34% still on the season, 90% on the penalty kill, one of the best in the NCHC. So that's definitely a bright point. And if you're the Huskies, you want a player to look forward to. It's fifth-year player Kevin Fitzgerald. Leads the team with 16 points. 2 weekends ago against Western was only the second time this year that he's been held off the score sheet for at least a two-game stretch, and exactly half of his points have come on the power play. You want to say half of those points came against St. Thomas, so throw those power play points off. He still averages a power play point at least once every 3 or 4 games. When he's buzzing, so are the Huskies. He's a good fifth-year player with veteran experience. I love the way he plays, and he's been a rock-solid foundation. I think if he's going, the team is falling with.
I would actually go the opposite because we haven't done that before. I think 5-on-5 actually is going to be key in this hockey matchup. North Dakota, we know, likes to use five men as offensive playmakers in the offensive zone, especially on the cycle. You'll see their D-man pinch all the way down to essentially the hash marks on both walls to try to keep that puck alive in the offensive zone. I think for St. Cloud defensively, I think they're a little vulnerable right now. I think their confidence is rattled. And I think, you know, for St. Cloud, a quick exit out of the zone, of course, staying disciplined is going to be huge because, again, if you're starting to chase the game, North Dakota's power play is lethal. So I think 5-on-5 play is going to be the X factor. Before we sign off here, Noah, predictions for Friday's game as far as score and the predictions for Saturday's game.
I'm going to go with 4-2 Huskies on Friday, and I'm going to go with 5-4 North Dakota, a barn burner on Saturday. So Huskies on Friday, North Dakota on Saturday. And I liked your point, too, about 5-on-5. I did want to kind of add this as well, too. 5-on-5 play, yes, the Huskies need to be better to breed success in terms of getting those special teams opportunities. I think their penalty kill isn't worrisome at all, but the Huskies have a chance to be lethal on the power play. And like you mentioned, that starts with that 5-on-5 play. And when you talk about the defensive core, you know, and also the underclassmen, there's not many in the St. Cloud group, but this is a chance for the experience and the veteran group of the Huskies to really show the freshmen how it's done and how you respond after a tough weekend.
Noah Grant, thank you very much. And for those who are just tuning in and missing you for the first time, where can they find you both either on social media and also anywhere else where they can find maybe coverage of St. Cloud hockey that you provide?
Yeah, absolutely. My personal Twitter handle is at SCSUHockey91. Of course, Nick and I do a podcast together at Warming House Den and HuskiesWarminghousePodcast.com. We have a lot of fun with that one. Show comes out every Sunday, and occasionally we have a guest as well, too. And Nick Maxson, of course, you can find him at the Puck Scribe. And if you don't find Nick Maxson, you'll find our friend Caleb Peabody, who will definitely be giving him some healthy...
He gives me heart palpitations is what he gives me at my old age. So Noah Grant, again, from the Huskies Warming House podcast, again, our fourth and final guest for this weekend's episode of the MCAA here on the Soda Pod. And thank you to everyone for following along. Please follow us on Twitter at MNCAA. And we will see you folks back here on the Soda Pod next week.
Oh, God damn it. Don't blame you, Nick, because, well, let's all be honest, this is 100% Isha's fault. Still hasn't persuaded the zero follower account of at MNCAA to hand over the keys to that handle. So, everyone, you can check out everything related to college hockey in Minnesota and this Friday edition of the Soda Pod at MN_NCAA. You can check out all of the work on our daily episodes at the Soda Pod. And please, you've all been listening now for a little bit, I'm sure. Please go out and follow all of our contributors if you don't already for some reason. And yes, this is the beginning of, I guess as Isha the Overlord would say, giving the keys to the castle to our boy Nick Maxson, who has been a great guy to work with. He will be running MNCAA until further notice. I might pop in here from time to time, but I think you can all see after just one episode that you're in far better hands now moving forward. So thank you to those tuning in on Google, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Folks, the best thing you can do for us this week is to give us 5 stars on iTunes, Apple Podcast. Go listen through our website, thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. On your app, download the episode before you listen, as it just helps our business. All right, signing off here for what might be the last time here on MNCAA. This is State of Hoppy, and you are listening to MNCAA, presented by the Soda Pod. Don't fear, just drink some beer and stay wild.